It's Matt Bubala in for John Williams here on 720 WGN. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome in. We're live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on the Magnificent Mile in the Tribune Tower. Lots of people out on Michigan Avenue enjoying a muggy day this afternoon. Susan, you were saying, what's the weather situation? I heard you saying we'll check in as weather warrants. What's going on? What are we worried about?
Well, we're not worried. We're not really worried. Just showers possible at any time, particularly south of I-80. It's so humid outside. There's a heat index making it feel about 5 degrees warmer than it actually is. Just showers possible anytime, but nothing like last night or downstate or any of that good stuff.
Okay, excellent, because we've got a little afternoon planned after the show today. I'm going to the Bean for the first. Can you believe I've never been? I'm trying to think.
Really?
I don't think I've been to the Bean. I haven't actually been up next to that Bean.
Oh.
And today, you know, Saturday, nobody going to be out there, no tourists, nothing. I'm sure it'll be empty. Probably have the whole Bean to ourselves.
Right. You'll be right there, you and your family with a selfie stick.
A nice, sweaty mass of people from all around the world. Nice little melting pot, I'm sure. You know, if we would have won these Olympics, if Chicago would have gotten the Olympics, they'd already be over. Can you believe that? We were going to start earlier, and we would have wrapped up already.
Oh, wow. I wish we'd had the Olympics.
I want to say I wish we had, too, but what would the headlines have been around here?
I don't know.
We wouldn't have had the Zika worries.
Mm-hmm.
Would we have had none of the buildings finished? I don't think so. I think Chicago would have gotten it done.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd be talking about the incredible, massive amount of debt that we would be facing for our next 18 generations.
Right.
And I wonder if there'd be a lot of talk about tourists being afraid to come to Chicago. Our headlines are all about the gun violence.
Yeah, I'm afraid that would definitely come into play.
But you know what? Overall, as much talk as there was about people not going to Rio, the water in Rio, everything else going wrong in Rio, for the last 2 weeks, we haven't been talking about any of that. We're talking about Simone and Allie and Michael Phelps and all these other people. I think that it's worked out relatively well, at least for these 2 weeks for Rio. I feel like people say that was a success. As far as at least, you know, pulling the games off.
Mm-hmm.
The diving water turned green. I think they fixed that, right?
Oh, gosh.
That was a weird one.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Phelps keeps winning. Is there a favorite moment you have so far from the Olympics, Susan?
Well, you know, I always fall for the U.S. Olympic team. And I mean the gymnastics. I mean the
yes.
girls. They're just
the final five.
So cute. And Simone with her outburst, her crying, it was just so genuine. And, you know, love to see Phelps come back and break records and, you know, be considered the old man at, what is he, 41 or something?
No, he's not anywhere near 41, is he? He's not 41.
He's not 41.
Is he in, like, early 30s? This is his, what Olympic, is this his fourth
Olympics?
It's
his fourth, so he's in his 30s, right?
I don't know. Times four is only 16 years. I bet he's under 35.
Okay. Well,
that's
he's
my
considered
guess.
Old, though.
Well, yes, for that sport, definitely.
And I love watching him, and especially his preparation when he just sits in the corner with his hood up.
All angry when Laclos is dancing by him.
He's
31.
That.
Lisa just told me he's 31.
Okay.
He's only 31.
I don't know where I got. Well, you know what? I saw 31 yesterday, and I somehow just stayed at 10.
Well, because you're thinking, well, he's been in Olympics ever since I can remember. The guy must be old. But he must have been there, what? He was 15 or 16, I guess, then the first time.
Yeah.
If you think about it. That's crazy. That's crazy. Lise, do you have a favorite moment from these Olympics?
I watched the trampolining the other day.
That is so much fun.
Oh, my gosh. I was, like, so inspired. I wanted to find some kids' trampoline in my neighborhood. And
the insurance industry must hate when they put the trampolining on because, you know, they do not want you having trampolines at your house, right? And then you see the trampolining and everybody's like, let's get a trampoline. That looks like a blast. And the thing is, I think, Susan, about the trampolining, I feel like I could do that. I could jump up and down on that thing, right?
Oh, yeah, you feel like
you feel that. You probably couldn't. Probably dislocate something or break something.
Definitely.
But it looks like something like you know, I look at the, right now they've got beach volleyball on. Well, I could mm-hmm. never be out in those outfits. That would never happen.
Oh, no.
But trampolining. Also, my kids have gotten really into the ping pong, the table tennis. I know there's a big hullabaloo about what mm-hmm. they should call it. But you watch those people. It seems like Forrest Gump to me when Tom Hanks is doing it. It was, you know, it was all CGI and it wasn't real, but these people are really actually doing it. But it doesn't seem like hitting a ball that fast or putting that crazy spin on it or returning those things is even humanly possible.
I know. And they look so focused and yes. vicious. And
well,
we have a ping pong table. So we're totally back into ping pong at our house.
Yeah. You know how ping pong goes at my house with three 11-year-olds and a 15-year-old?
Oh, boy.
They learned on one of our travel baseball trips this year a game called Welt. Some older kids taught them this. That is where I think how it works is you're playing ping pong, and when you miss the ball, instead of the other player getting a point, the other player, you have to turn around, take your shirt off, and the other player gets to throw the ball in the air and hit it as hard as they can into your back.
Oh.
Leaving a welt.
Interesting.
And this seems like you'd play that for maybe one round. These kids are lining back up to play it over and over again. Like a bunch of numbskulls.
It's time to go back to school.
So we had about 20 ping pong balls in our basement. I think we have one left that works now because they're all dented, bruised, or broken from welt.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I hope my son's not listening. He's 13. He would dig on that.
To be young again. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala in for John Williams this afternoon. John has his Thomas Jefferson. Today it was Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt was with John out at the College DuPage earlier today. We'll check in with John a little bit later in the show. After the 1:30 news, Heidi Stevens will be here from your Chicago Tribune. She's writing this weekend about whether our high schoolers should have a job while they're in high school. And then Adam Richman, you remember from Man vs. Food, he'll be along with us. But if you want to jump in right now, we'd love to have you on the line. 312-981-7200. Is there a favorite moment of yours from these Olympics? And I want to talk a little bit more about Gabby Douglas because she's been surrounded by controversy, even though she's had a wonderful Olympics. The internet seems to be dogging her about every little thing she does. We'll talk about that next. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for John Williams. King John is off today. He was hanging out with Teddy Roosevelt. 720 WGN throngs out on Michigan Avenue today. It's a beautiful day to be out and walking in our gorgeous city. A couple of people have texted in about what they think about some of the things at the Olympics so far this year and about whether or not Chicago would have done well with them. By the way, Susan, a little math lesson for you and I. We were told by text we only have to subtract 12 years from the Olympics because, you know, you got one on the end, one at the beginning. So just 12 years, he was 19.
Oh, he was 19.
His first time in the Olympics.
Okay.
Yeah, he was only 19.
Got it.
And then somebody else said that somebody has been, an athlete was kidnapped in Rio. So they've got that. I don't remember how that turned out. I think that turned out okay, like that was a short-term thing. I know people got mugged. I know people got swindled. Mm-hmm. I know some of the USA basketball team ended up in a house of ill repute. And claim that they thought it was a spa, which is the greatest story ever. No, it's like a spa. We thought it was a spa. It's, you know, it's a spa. And we go in. And then after a while, we thought, maybe this isn't a spa. So we just had like a drink or two. And then we left. And somebody wrote a great piece about dissecting their whole story on we thought it was a spa. And online on Yahoo or somewhere, they had pictures of the establishment they went to, which is about an hour outside of Rio. So that seems odd to travel that
right.
far for what must be a great spa. But then you get to the spa and it looks like, you know, a warehouse blacked out kind of building. And you don't think high quality masseuse inside generally when you get there. But they probably figured we went this far. It got really good Yelp reviews. Let's just see what they have. And I imagine they liked it at first because most spas, you don't start buying drinks right away, I'm guessing. I think you drink like some green tea or
right.
some
most
of that chlorophyll
spas
water.
Are alcohol free.
Yeah. So, but hey, we're in Rio. Maybe this is how spas work. You know, we don't know. We don't know. I thought that was a really good story that some of the members of the USA basketball team told.
Well, it started when they were staying on their own private ship.
Well, that's the other thing that the guy wrote about is it's odd that they traveled on outside of Rio for a spa when they're staying on this incredible ship with workout rooms and everything else where they probably could have gotten a masseuse, right? The USA basketball probably has a masseuse with.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they thought, you know, but we want to experience the local, we want to support the local economy. You know, they were doing good. They were doing good work. 312-981-7200 is the number. We asked if you had a favorite moment from these Olympics. Michelle seems to have one. Michelle, you're on 720 WGN. How are you?
Good, thanks. Hi, Matt.
How are you?
Yeah, I like the usual. I mean, of course, you always love like gymnastics and everything like that. But I also like the unexpected things, like when Simone Manuel won in swimming the other night, you know, becoming the first African-American woman to win a medal in swimming. Because at first you could see the surprise on her face, but then she also like recognized the significance of the moment and even, you know, talked about it. And, it was just, and it was hard not to, you know, just feel it for her.
There have been some great, I think, come together moments for Americans at these games and some great diversity that happening. Yeah. And you look at the USA women's gymnastics team and what a great melting pot of America they are. I think that's, you know, there've been a lot of beautiful moments like that.
The fact that, you know, and the fact that, you know, I think now that people would even say that little girls can look at them and say, oh, I can do that. That's not just for the other girls.
That makes a difference. Michelle, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it. Have a great day. 312-981-7200. There is a bride and groom on the center median on Michigan Avenue right now with about five photographers around them getting their wedding pictures taken. And it's cute and adorable, but they've got like a professional entourage of photographers out there. I've seen people come downtown and have a photographer taking your wedding photos. They literally have five people, including a guy in a Steadicam.
Kind of paparazzi.
Yes.
I saw some, I was walking down the Riverwalk, and there were a couple, I think it must have been engagement photos because she didn't have a dress on, but it was just like weird. I don't know. I was like.
A little too much?
Yeah.
A little bit of pressure for an engagement.
Awkward.
To me, that's a little bit of pressure on the whole situation.
Yeah, because if you're doing your pictures in, you know, Chicago Riverwalk for your engagement, what are you going to do for your wedding?
They're jumping out of a plane for the wedding.
Exactly, skydive.
And now they're coming across the street. She has a gorgeous dress. He's a very handsome fella.
What's the dress look like? I can't see it.
It was actually a champagne color.
Oh.
It's not white.
Is it like A-line or mermaid?
I don't know all of these terms. It was a strapless.
Okay.
That's about the best I can do for you.
Hey, you know, I'm pretty proud of you.
Thank you. That I could know strapless? I've come a long way, baby. 312-981-7200 is the number. Texter from 773 says, I like the finger wave the Eastern European swimmer did, then the American swimmer kicked her butt. That's from Tina. I don't love the trash talking at the Olympics, and there's very little of that, I would say. Oh, my gosh, Judy Markey. Hello, how are you?
Hi.
What's going on? Are you just coming in?
I came in to say hi to you.
How are you?
Fine. Are your kids into the Olympics a lot?
Yes. We've been watching it a ton. What about you? Have you been watching a lot?
I've been watching the swimming and gymnastics, but I was talking this morning about my husband's like so into the swimming. And last night, he wants me to love it as much as he does.
Mm-hmm.
And like I saw the girl who went to Stanford and she won the individual.
This is Katie Ledecky. I don't know.
No, not Katie.
Background. Okay.
It's, her name is Maya or something like that. Okay. But anyway, so she won and I saw the end of it, and I'm in the bathroom. I'm brushing my teeth and everything.
Maya Dorato. Maya Dorato.
Maya Dorato.
Maya Dorato.
And so I'm brushing my teeth, and he goes, Jude, come on in here. I go, what? He says, Maya Dorato. I said, I saw Maya Dorato. No, you got to come now. You can see the whole thing. Really?
You're not that into it, huh?
I like it, but the
passively.
Gymnastics, yeah, you know, I mean, I like synchronized diving. I'm really sorry, but
how can you get that into synchronized diving? I mean, it's technically it's difficult. Yes,
it's such a miracle that people can do that
at the exact same time.
Yes, because they're in the air.
Are you as into a chorus line? Because that's also, you know, that's very timed and precise. Are you into anything like?
But you're on land. You're not
that's
in the
true.
Air. Like
that's
you have
true.
Different body weights. And you're turning, how do you get your body to turn at the exact same time in the air that you're not the boss of?
Well, it's all timing just, isn't it?
Well, yes, but how do you manage that? I mean, I think that's kind of remarkable.
Huh.
But like, and so we were asking people if they were ever into something and wanted their spouse to be really into it, but they couldn't. Like, does Colleen want you to like something a whole lot?
Boy, that's a good question. Like, I tend to like TV shows that she's like, yeah, you know. So I try to get her into, like, we just finished watching Making a Murderer.
Oh,
actually.
And did you see the thing today?
That he just got, yes,
yes.
Yesterday they overturned Brendan Dassey's conviction. We'll talk about that a little later on. But so, you know, my buddies had watched it. They're all, oh my God, it's so good. You get so into it. And I've seen all people on social media say, I stayed up all night because I couldn't turn it off. And so we watched the first one and she, the whole time, really? Is it just about it? Is this all we're going to see? And it took her two episodes. And then finally she got on board. But I sometimes go through that. That's one of
ours. Well, don't you guys watch separate TV shows sometimes? Like Tom, like The Closer a lot.
We don't have separate TVs. We're kind of a one TV household as far as shows go, and we don't have one in the bedroom. What's your view on that? I've been debating that for the last few years.
Well, I prefer having a TV in the bedroom to the living room. There's no TV in our living room.
Okay.
But we don't have four kids.
True.
Where you're going to want to watch either in the living room or if you have a family room.
We just kick them out. If it's time for mom and dad to watch a show, they have to go do something else.
Oh. Well, you're fabulous parents.
I don't know about that.
And that was a very funny picture. For those of you who may or may not have seen the picture of Matt with his 15-year-old Tommy.
Michael. Is the 15-year-old. Yeah. I'm sorry. No. Jack.
Jack, right.
Yes, is 15 and driving.
Driving. How'd it go?
It's, you know what? He's actually doing pretty well. He actually is. And I posted a funny photo of me like freaking
it's
out
very
about
funny.
It.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny that I remember when I started driving. And I still tease my mom about this. She would be sitting next to me. I don't remember if this was when I got my... Actually, still now when she drives with me. She'll still do the same thing because she freaks out. But she works that pretend brake on that side of the car. I mean, she will press down on a brake. And that handguard up above, she will almost pull out of the roof. And she did that to me incessantly when I was driving as a kid. And it always made me laugh. And I don't do that as much with Jack. But it is funny to think about just what they have to get used to that we have taken for granted for, what, 30, 40 years.
Right.
And that is just that you don't slam on the brake. You slowly ease into it. And when you're leaving from a stop sign, you know, you slowly put on the gas. You don't just put the foot down. So it's a lot of jerking your head back and forth with probably any kid until they get a little bit used to, okay, this is how this works.
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, you have to practice with the smooth. And the smooth isn't the first thing that comes to you. You know, you have to be smooth.
It just takes time.
Right. It does. Yeah. And, you know, if you just have a half of a beer before you go.
Oh, I don't know that that's a good idea.
To take the edge off.
Oh,
of
gosh.
How hard you slam your foot down, I think it helps.
Wait.
Because it does make them nervous that you're nervous.
Okay. So I have the beer, not him.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just because you said that it takes the edge off and then you don't put your foot down as hard.
I
thought you meant him. Like, wait a minute.
No,
I'm not letting him have
you.
Half a beer.
You can't change his behavior.
I can't start drinking and then taking him out to drive. That just seems wrong.
Well, half a beer isn't going to hurt you.
Well, it's not going to do much either, though.
Well, I hope you get a text that say I'm an irresponsible parent and no wonder my kids turned out that way and all like that. I love hearing you on the radio.
It's so good to be here. Thank you for coming by, Judy. Now you have to go because we have to go to the news. I'm late. Now I'm late, Judy.
Okay, sorry.
All right, news break and then the wonderful Heidi Stevens in studio next. Matt Bubala in for John Williams, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for John Williams on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio. On the Magnificent Mile, it is gorgeous outside today. Joining us in studio right now is Heidi Stevens, my favorite Chicago Tribune writer. I tell you that all the time because I love reading your articles because I relate to them as a parent of young kids. And you write about work-life balance and things like that. So I've always enjoyed reading you. And thank you so much for coming in. Also, a West Dundee. She grew up in West Dundee. I've moved to West Dundee. So we're keeping a flame. Yes, you did. You did. Thank you.
I made West Dundee great from time for you.
You put it on the map for us. Thank you.
It's on some map somewhere.
It's just north of Elgin. Elgin's always on the map. So you have a piece that's online right now. Is this in tomorrow's Chicago Tribune?
Tomorrow's, yep, Sunday's Tribune.
When it hits your porch tomorrow, you have to look for Heidi's Balancing Act article tomorrow, column tomorrow, on whether or not our teenagers should work when they're in high school.
Right, during school. So summer jobs is a different question, right? And a little more obvious. Like, why not have them work? But should they work during the school year was the question.
So this has been online for a couple of days now. What's the feedback been so far?
So far, people are pro-job, pro giving kids jobs. I think the one thing that trips a lot of parents up is like, I don't want the job getting in the way of homework, right? Academics. And if your kids are already super busy, they're on sports teams or they're in theater or they're doing, you know, a lot of extracurricular stuff, maybe they don't have time to squeeze in a job. But the point that I loved from John Duffy, who's a local, he's actually here on WGN often, you might know him. his point was like, it's actually pretty good in this day and age for kids to stay busy. Like, it's not necessarily what it was 20, 30 years ago where they need a lot of downtime, because a lot of downtime now means probably Snapchat and Netflix and not necessarily, you know, sitting around using your imagination or
Yeah, they're not out with cardboard boxes in the backyard anymore, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, they're in their bedroom on a device, and maybe not for the best reasons. So so downtime isn't necessarily something we need to, you know, protect and cherish the way we used to, in his mind. And I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And so if you find that your kid has a lot of time on his or her hands, you know, yeah, a part-time job can really be quite beneficial in ways beyond just giving them some spending money.
Well, you know, that's interesting, Heidi, because we've always thought of it as, well, you got to work, you've got to earn some money, you know, when we were kids growing up. And then it was kind of like, you got to get out and start working. But for our kids, who, you're right, in their downtime aren't out as much, at least playing with other kids in the neighborhood or riding their bikes places. They're on social media. They're not interacting as much with each other.
Right.
I would think there's an added benefit of having to work, you know, especially in a retail job or a service industry job where you have to interact with people, which they might not get enough of these days.
Right. That's what the experts I talked to said, that exact thing, that especially in like service oriented and retail jobs where they have to, you know, even if all they have to muster up is like have a good day or, you know, yeah, that's an aisle eight, that can be really good for kids who aren't used to having to, you know, make eye contact necessarily or answer questions in a polite, timely fashion.
Yeah.
In this case, they're sort of forced to, and that can be really good for them.
I've been surprised, you know, once I got into the workforce and started to know older people who already had kids who were teenagers, I was surprised at how many I knew who didn't ever hold jobs throughout high school, mostly because of it, or theoretically because of all their extracurricular activities.
Yep.
We have so many kids that play on travel teams or competitive dance and just all the things boys and girls are all doing now that as kids we didn't do. We had, you know, park district, whatever.
Right.
And that was pretty much it. And now there's this pressure for kids to play things year round or do things all the time and be so engaged. And so I wonder, in your opinion, can we think of that as, well, if they're doing all that stuff full time, that's sort of like having a job. It's not money, but they're out doing something. At least they're not at home. Or is there, you know, now I know they're doing all this stuff, but at some point you have to start learning, because it's hard to then jump into college, I would think, and suddenly now you have to go work or get out of college without ever having a real job,
right,
and suddenly do it for the first time.
Yeah, it is and it isn't. I mean, the one thing I thought was so interesting from Richard Rendy, who was the other expert I interviewed for this, he's an author and child psychologist, he said that what he hears often from business owners is that it's not that kids are graduating from college and not hard workers or not motivated. They're super hard workers. They're super motivated. They've been working their tails off doing all the things you just mentioned to get into the right college, right? Like they're groomed from, you know, seventh grade on. So they're used to working hard. They're used to being busy, but they're not so much, they're not showing a lot of initiative. So they don't walk into a situation and know what to do and then start doing it. They're used to being told what to do and coached and following directions and following orders. But to go into, you know, let's say the back room of a grocery store and have to figure out what needs to be put where and by what time so that you can get it done before your break, and all of those little decisions that have to be made during a part-time job can be really powerful.
Yeah. What's your favorite high school job memory? Where did you work?
So
I
worked at Spring Hill Mall in the aforementioned Dundee, at Spies, which is no longer there.
What was Spies?
It was a department store. Now
really?
It's, I don't know what is over there now, but it was like a, I don't know, maybe like not quite as fancy as Marshall Field's, but a little step above Penny's.
Okay.
And I sold shoes. I worked in the shoe department.
Excellent.
It was fun, you know.
Yeah.
I got to learn how to measure feet. And I learned what
odd
a
skill to carry
is
throughout life, but
you never know when you're a journalist, you got to have a fallback on
what a sundry job. Is.
Sundry.
A
so,
sundry. Oh, goods and sundries.
Yes.
What is a sundry?
See, I didn't know that before I sold shoes. It's an accessory.
Oh.
So like we would sell little like shoe clips and
polishes,
shoe polish, shoelaces.
Laces.
Yeah, and you got extra commission if you sold a sundry.
I was just going to ask. And was there pressure to get a sundry added on?
There was a lot of pressure, yeah.
Make sure you push the laces.
Would you like a navy flower made out of leather to clip to that flat so that it could be for nighttime?
$7.99. That sounds like you had a little bit of a script involved.
Well, you know, I did.
Wow,
I
was, that they wrote and like you'd learned?
Oh, okay.
You would write.
I learned sales.
What a good high school worker you were.
Right?
You were actually writing scripts for what you would say to the customers.
Sure. It was my early training as a writer.
That is impressive. That's impressive.
I also worked at Mrs. Fields Cookies.
Okay. That sounds like a dangerous job.
Also in the mall. It was a caloric job.
How often were your friends coming? Yeah. Heidi's working. She's at the cookies. Let's go.
Here's
Heidi,
what,
hook us up. Come on, Heidi. You're throwing those out. Come on.
Here's what they don't tell you until you're hired. Any cookie that gets broken, they can't sell. So, you know, yeah. You eat it, right? So a lot of cookies are getting broken in the back room.
On accident.
On.
Wink, wink.
Quote, unquote. Wink, wink. Accident.
Poor Mrs. Fields. If they ever go under, we're going to know what happened. Too much breakage. Too much spillage.
This is a state secret. I probably shouldn't have said it on radio.
Yeah, that's
I worked at the Gap.
Fun. Excellent.
Yeah. So, you know, I had my share of retail jobs.
312-981-7200. We've got some more time with Heidi. If you want to jump in and talk about whether or not your high schooler is working, or whether you feel like they should be and they won't, or if you think that they shouldn't have to work, maybe, because there is the argument that we push our kids into too many things too fast. Is a job one of the things that you think they can lay off on for a while? 312-981-7200, 720 WGN. It's Matt Bubala in for John Williams on 720 WGN. It's 10 to 2. After the 2 o'clock news, Adam Richman, you remember him from Man vs. Food. His new show is called Secret Eats. He'll join us to talk about what they're doing on that show and what his favorite places are to eat in Chicago. In studio with us still is Heidi Stevens from your Chicago Tribune. You can follow Heidi on Twitter at HeidiStevens13. Have you gone after the other 12 yet? Have you thought about taking them out one by one?
Yeah, I'm looking for them. I've got a private investigator.
I think either just at Heidi Stevens or at Heidi Stevens 1, because that sounds cool.
Right.
But I think at least 11 people got to get out of your way.
I was late to Twitter. I was hoping if I docked, it would just go over my head and go. And
but now you've embraced
passe,
it. You're really good about doing
it.
Yeah,
I'm okay now.
You're very good on social media.
It took me a while. It took me so long that 12 other Heidis beat me to it.
Yeah.
Heidi Stevens is
no
not
kidding.
Just Heidis.
Yes. Well, at least you're not like Heidi Stevens, 84.
Right.
Then
true.
It would like just, well, I'm just not even going to do this.
Yeah,
this
I
is embarrassing.
I just changed my name to Heather at that point. People always call me Heather anyway.
312-981-7200. A lot of texts coming in about whether our kids should be in the workforce during their high school years when they're in school. 773 says, my daughter just graduated from MSU with an economics degree. She worked numerous jobs in high school and college. She did internships. What no one told her is to work in this area, you need special licenses. To get a license, you need a sponsor. To get a sponsor, you
right.
need a job. It's catch 22. The deck is stacked against these kids.
That's true.
630 says, I think they absolutely should have a job. However, all of the activities make it often impossible. And so that's an interesting statement, because I think a lot of parents would say, you know, but they're playing this and they're doing this. So it's really, I don't want to push them too hard. And we have these two sides of the coin for parents these days. Either we're helicopter parents, we do too much for them, mm-hmm. we take care of them too much, they're never going to be able to fend for themselves. Or we push them too hard, we make them do too much, they're involved in too many activities, and we don't give them time to be a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Both arguments, I think, are relatively valid, though, too.
Totally. And I think, ideally, there's some kind of middle ground where you're not doing either one. You're not ignoring their needs, and you're also not hovering over their every move.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, a part-time job doesn't have to be 20 hours a week, right? Like, it could be 6 or 8 hours a week.
But do you think that's a real tough job to find? Can you go into retailing? I'm looking for just 6 to 8 hours.
Well,
you know?
Probably. But I don't know. Babysitting and, you know, things, maybe busboy, like jobs that aren't super...
But they should be they should be doing that before high school, right? Babysitting? I mean,
I think, well, no, they should. I think that first woman or man who texted about the permits, I think that's an issue for kids before they turn 16. I think the permits, I think work permits aren't such a hardship once the kids turn 16. You don't need a sponsor.
You don't need a work permit once you're 16. 16 is legal age to work, right?
Right.
I remember 15 needing a work permit.
Right. So I think she's talking about kids maybe who are trying to work before 16.
I think she was talking about the degree she's going into. To work in this area, you need special licenses. So I think she was referring to maybe whatever her daughter went into, although she was going for economics. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But it is tough sometimes for kids at young age to get a, you know, a legal paying job.
Right.
Where there's going to be paperwork and IRS and all that involved. I think for babysitting, it's often easier. And, you know, they don't have paper routes anymore for kids.
They don't.
That was my first job ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
It is sad for a lot of reasons. So to get back to your original question, I don't know. I mean, I think that you have to decide as an individual parent and your particular family's values, you know, do I want my kid to get to be in three, you know, kind of fun competitive activities or do I want to limit him or her to one?
Yeah.
Fun competitive activity and say, you know, you can also work 8 or 10 hours a week.
Yeah.
'Cause it's going to give you these five skills that soccer won't.
You know, it's funny. I think that you could have a rule that you can get involved in whatever you want. However, you're still going to work at least 8 hours a week mm-hmm. once you're of this age. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the tough thing, I think, for some parents is some of those activities we really want them doing
right.
more than they want themselves right. doing. So they're like, that's fine. I work 40 hours yeah. a week.
I won't even go to school.
Yeah. And it's funny. I know one of the young girls in our neighborhood who we've been friends with for a long time, she's got a job teaching swimming this year. And her dad was telling me that she can't wait to turn. She wants a full-time job. She's sick of this only working so many hours. And I think there's finally a tipping point at some time in our young kids' lives where they finally, I remember I was working at a gas station in high school and I would have these checks that just sat in my bedroom. Mm. I was getting yelled at by them. Like, why aren't you cashing those checks?
Yeah.
I have like four of them. They're like, you're screwing up our books. I'm like, well, I'm not spending any money. I don't need to. They just sit there.
Yeah.
And then I got a girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
And I never had a check laying around yeah. again. Suddenly, so there's at some point in your life, a kid goes, wait, money, that could be a lot of fun to have. Let's
right.
start using that. And then suddenly they want to work.
Yep.
And as parents, we still want them taking piano or playing baseball or running track and cross country and all these, being in theater and all these other things.
Yeah.
So it's this, it's a bit of a balancing act for parents at some point too, I would think.
Well, I am always, you know, quoting Michelle Obama because I adore her. But one thing that she does, or at least, you know, is on record as saying that she does is make her daughters choose one sport they want to play. And then she gets to choose one sport she wants them to play. And I think that can be kind of a metaphor for parenting, right?
Yeah.
So that, you know, yeah, you give your kids some freedom to choose what they want to fill their life with, but you're still also in charge.
Yeah.
You're still the authority figure, and you still probably know more than they do in a lot of ways because you have more life experience.
Yeah.
So it's okay to say, like, yeah, I know you want to do this, this, and this, but you're going to do this and this, and then because I'm in charge,
yeah,
I pay the bills.
And one of the daughters worked this summer, right? Didn't we hear?
Did she?
The younger one?
Sasha.
I thought I read something that she was working a little
yeah.
bit this summer.
I know. I remember when Malia was old enough to babysit, that was a story because President Obama said, and now she's old enough to babysit. And that was a big deal. But that was years ago because right now she's old enough to go to college.
Now she's at Lollapalooza.
And then doing her gap year and then off to Harvard.
All right, real quick. We only have a minute left because you just mentioned the gap year. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of kids don't know what they want to major in, don't know who they want to be, don't know where they want to be at 17. I mean, I had no self-awareness at 17. I don't know if I took a year off, if I would have made the same decisions about
yeah.
where I went to college. And no, I think it's a great idea. If your family can swing it financially and you can still get into a good school, I love it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting because there's so much pressure. When I was going to college, there was no pressure on, do you know what you want to do and why you are going to this exact college?
Exactly.
And 4 years to figure that out.
Right.
And now college costs such a ridiculous amount of money.
Right.
And it's like, do you really need to go there for whatever you're going to do? Or can we find a more economical solution to
right.
get you a degree?
Yeah. You don't even apply to places until you've decided what you're majoring in. So you can find the school that best tailored to that major. And that's just a ton of pressure.
To figure out what you want to do with your life at 16, which often, I mean, I'm not doing what I thought I'd do at 16, that's
right.
for sure. I think
no.
most people.
People in their 40s
aren't.
Don't know what they want to do when they grow up.
That's true. The great Heidi Stevens, her piece will be in tomorrow's Sunday Chicago Tribune. It's also online right now at chicagotribune.com. And you can follow Heidi on Twitter at HeidiStevens13. Thank you so much for coming
Thanks,
in, as
Matt.
Always. Awesome to see you.
You too.
Matt Bubala in for John Williams here on 720 WGN. Well, if you're a fan of food and a fan of television, you know the name Adam Richman. Man vs. Food, of course, was so famous. He's done a few shows since then. And the latest that just premiered this past week, Secret Eats with Adam Richman. He joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Adam, how are you?
How's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on the phone with us. We appreciate it. Secret Eats. I watched the premiere episode in London. Is it the coolest job in the world you have that you keep coming up with? Well, why don't we do this for a TV show? Let's go here. And now you travel, you eat food, you see the world. I imagine we think it's more glamorous than it is, but it's not a bad gig, right?
No, I mean, I consider myself really, really fortunate. I mean, to do what I do, to work with the people I work with, to be able to, you know, both do right by these, you know, independently owned restaurants. And, you know, to really create, like, TV shows that people can use. I mean, even if it's just 20 minutes of or 22 minutes of, escape, you know, escape during the week. Or if it's, you know what, I'm inspired to travel, to cook, to, you know, do something in either one of those spaces. That means a lot.
Well, I know with your shows and with other shows that are out there sort of like it, you know, now when we travel as a family, we tend to be like, oh, Man vs. Food, they were in this town, and, you know, and my son will look up the episodes, and we've gone to places
awesome.
Before specifically because we watched episodes as a family that you were on. And now with this international flair, I don't know when we'll get to London with four kids, but it's pretty cool. So let's talk a little bit about this show. It's called Secret Eats, just premiered this week on the Travel Channel.
Correct.
And I got to see the first episode, as I said, which was set in London. The funny thing to me, though, is, Adam, so you're highlighting places that either have a secret dish on the menu or some that are just completely a secret restaurant, which is cool and weird. But then why do they want you to tell everybody about it?
Well, I think that it's like a flip side. You know that obviously you want to keep it secret and you want the word of mouth thing to perpetuate the story of that restaurant or that dish. But the flip side is that, you know, you want to create, a successful restaurant.
Yeah.
You want to sort of get the word out there. And especially in England, where I have a lot of popularity, I think sort of that also knowing that it's sort of Adam tasted, Adam approved, means a lot to these restaurants. And look, whatever gets these really wonderful people more business and gets people around the world eating, you know, kick-ass food instead of eating room service in their hotel, I'm all for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would imagine so. When you find these places and you go to them, are you ever – I know that, you know, there's a lot of – you know, it looks simple on TV. We just showed up and here's this place. But I know there's a lot of production work. But I imagine over the years – you know, you always look very happy on TV, Adam, when you bite into the food. And I don't know if that's ever been disguised or if it's vetted well enough that you know we're going to get something good no matter where we go.
Well, I mean, I think we do so much research. You know, filming a television show is such an expensive affair. You know, I have crew members that, are, you know, are union and they're on the clock. I've got, locals that are being paid, you know, local production assistants or what have you. And, you know, you have to do a lot of organizing and you have to sort of keep it moving, but you have to do copious amounts of research. And the thing is, while everything may not necessarily be to my liking, that a lot of these places are legendary because thousands of other people do like them.
Yeah.
And generally, you know my shows, dude. Like, you know that I traffic in, like, the foods you want to eat, the mac and cheese, the delicious chicken parmesan sandwiches that, you know, everyone loves. So usually, even if it's bad, it's still pretty good.
Has there ever been a place, and I don't want you to name a name or even which show, but has there ever been a place that, you know, it was researcher, but he did it, and then you get there and you're like, oh my God, this is not good.
It is not good? Yeah, absolutely. There was one location we filmed, and I appreciate you giving me a pass on it, but no, we filmed in a place for our Niagara Falls episode.
Okay.
And it was so, the kitchen was so vile. The organization was so bad amongst the staff, but I literally just took a bunch of photos, sent them back to production. And, you know, I have a lot of kids that watch my shows. Like you said, a lot of families follow my recommendations.
Yeah.
So I literally put all the photos in one email and wrote one line. I said, for those of you with families, would you want your children eating out of this kitchen? And I said, for no money, I would go and shoot a whole other location. And we did. We ended up filming at a great restaurant with great people. And it was better. But, yeah, I take people's trust in me very seriously.
Yeah, I would imagine so. So, Secret Eats, London, and what was the other one that premiered? Buenos Aires this week. That was, you know, I saw the London one, which was all sorts of different food. I know Buenos Aires covered steaks and other things. Where else are you traveling this year, and what are you going to be eating?
Oh, my God, it was incredible. We went to 13 countries. We went to Cape Town in Johannesburg, South Africa. We've been to Mexico City, to Warsaw, to Moscow, to Rome, to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, Vietnam, Philippines, Hong Kong. I mean, it's just incredible. And try everything from Singapore chili crab style mac and cheese in a hidden restaurant in Hong Kong to a, I'm trying to remember. And then, oh my God, in Rome, the food in Rome was just so insanely good. And we filmed in a little village called Frascati, just outside of Rome. And the meal that the people made for us for our crew meal was so incredible. We kept saying, okay, next season, 14 episodes, all Italy.
Yeah, I would imagine you get to some places and you're like, wait a minute, there's like 18 more places we got to try here.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, the thing is generally, you know, you try to be disciplined, you know, with your diet when you're filming because, you know, that was how I got, you know, I gained weight in the first place. It wasn't doing the show, but rather, you know, you're eating for the show, but then you go out to eat at night. It's hard to keep reminding yourself, like, no, those are not, like, just work calories. Those are actual calories. So it's hard to sort of have that discipline and just say, oh, okay, it's, you know, I kind of had my meal. I have to have an apple now and keep kind of disciplined. So the thing was, I remember all of us even said that with Rome, we were all going to just sort of give ourselves a little bit of a pass. And I'm friendly with Mario Batali, and I had texted him, where should I go? And bless his heart, he sends me this, like, epic text back, and I tried to hit everything on his list.
Oh, that must have been incredible.
My waistline tells the tale.
I can imagine so. On the new show that's on the Travel Channel now, I noticed in the episode that, like, your crew was in it a little more than I've ever seen in the past.
Yeah, especially the first season. Because for people that are listening, the first season was called Man Finds Food, and they've actually just chosen to retitle it.
Okay.
Secret Eats. But, yes, the reason why is, number one, I love them. Number two, they legitimately are with me as when we pull up at these restaurants and can't find it. And I was just saying that instead of me trying to, like, over-dramatize it, let's just show me and the crew trying to discover the restaurant.
Yeah.
And being lost in an alleyway and all of us going, where the hell are we? Like, what are we filming? And I think that that was really important because like you said, people go, okay, I get it. It's Adam. He likes everything he eats. He never doesn't like anything. That, you know, when you start seeing my crew taste things, or when you start seeing my crew, people that you see with cameras on their shoulders going, dude, this is the right address, but I don't see any restaurant. that's what we want to happen because the audience has a better BS detector and our deserving of greater respect than a lot of hosts give their intelligence.
Yeah, well, we are a pretty jaded crew these days, so it is nice to see a little more reality in our reality television, right?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. What's the big joke? That there's no more reality left? We already filmed it all?
Well, all the script writers have written everything for reality TV they can think of, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, there's no plot twist where, like, my director Kat accidentally leaves her diary out on the bus. No. But one of the other things that I think is really sweet and is, you know, through Man vs. Food, Best Sandwich in America, Fandemonium, and so on, all these shows, they were me and my perspective. And I think this is a shared journey. And I can't pretend that they aren't there. I can't pretend that these other awesome people, and to be fair, my camera guy, Tom Dodson, is, I mean, not that this is a hard thing to be because my jokes, I know how corny they are, but he's the funniest human being alive and it drives me crazy. I'll sit there and I'll yammer on for, like, you know, 10 minutes,
right,
20, whatever, and then he'll, like, have a one-liner that will kill us for days.
Adam Richman is the host of Secret Eats on the Travel Channel. When we come back, let's find out where they went this season. Also, where does Adam like to eat when he gets to Chicago? We'll find out next. Matt Bubali in for John Williams on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for John Williams here on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Adam Richman. He's the host of Secret Eats. It just premiered this past week on the Travel Channel. How many, 13 different countries did you hit this year?
14 episodes in 13 countries across, I think, across four continents. And then we did, we've actually shot a few specials that are going to be made into future episodes. So we've shot Greenland. We've shot Iceland. We've shot, we're going to shoot some more domestic stuff coming up. But I have to say, for me, having started Man vs. Food in 08, that even the folks that aren't in the field, when they just get the footage back in New York, we start editing, that there's a kind of excitement that I haven't seen with the crew in so long, and it's so cool. Like, everybody runs, like, you know, packs through to watch the screenings in production. Like, even the editors that have worked on it for hours and hours, they still enjoy it, and that means a lot to me.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I would imagine, you know, the toughest audience is the best one to please, right?
Yeah, and the fact, like you say, it's a jaded thing. We were laughing about it. We were in the Guguletu township outside of Cape Town, South Africa, and there's a delicious kind of South African sausage called boerewors, and this place is known for their boerewors. And the big joke is the two things you never want to see being made are sausage and television. And we were laughing that we now had to go make a TV show about making sausage. We're like, we're doomed. We're so doomed. But it's the cool thing is, like you say, we break the fourth wall. This is a true thing that you'll see in the Cape Town episode, we're filming on a pier. I'm talking. These two fishermen pull up at the pier in Kalk Bay, and they go, what are you filming? And we just keep rolling, and I tell them. And I said, can I ask you a question? And then I said, is the fish at, you know, the restaurant we were filming at this little hidden pier at this place, Kalkies, is the fish fresh? He's like, I should hope so. I sell them their fish. And he goes, look. And I turn around, and we see, because, you know, the fishing boats are now coming in, and they're throwing their fish up on the docks and auctioning them off. And he goes, look. And I turn around, and we have it on camera. You see the chef, one of the chefs, come out of the kitchen door, catch the fish that are being thrown from the boat, and take the fish back into the kitchen. And it's like, it sounds like some schmaltzy thing some idiot TV host says to, you know, the person interviewing him, but it's true. It's so true, and it's so good. And as someone who goes to England a lot, that I had some of the best fish and chips in Kalk Bay, South Africa, is madness.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, when you talk like this, Adam, it's funny because on TV, your persona is like, you're just like me. You're going to go for a burger and fries and whatever. But when we see you in the episodes, then breaking it down and describing it to us afterwards, I get a sense that you're a little more of a foodie than your persona allows us to believe. Where are you on that? Are you just a meat and potatoes guy, or are you a real foodie?
I mean, I think you can be a... The word foodie has become like so many different things.
Right.
Like, I've worked in the industry in some capacity since I was 12 years old. You know, bussing tables at local places, sweeping in front of restaurants, delivering, putting menus on the car windshield wipers. I've been cooking since I was a kid. So I've been around it for so long and come from a family that loves to cook and knows food. But I think... That's the thing, right, is that have the knowledge that the quote-unquote foodies have, but you don't have to present it in a pretentious, inaccessible way.
Yeah.
That if you read me as a meat and potatoes guy, but I actually know my stuff, then that's the best thing ever, because if I speak in an honest, clear way that people understand, I could talk to you about everything from artichokes to astrophysics, and it won't make a difference because I'm just keeping it 100 and keeping it real. And I feel that if I sat there, and let's also be honest about my qualifications. I'm not a trained chef. I'm a damn good cook who has, to quote Man vs. Food's intro, held nearly every job in the restaurant biz. That's not a misnomer.
Yeah.
So that I feel more of the country, to be fair, brother, more of the country are really good cooks and really passionate food people and not trained chefs. So that's why I tell people, and I admit the term is a little too clever by half, but I tell people that I'm not a foodie. I'm a gastronaut. I'm a food explorer.
That's not bad. All right. So you're talking to us here in Chicago, of course, Adam. I hate to put you on the spot because the show is about all over the world, but I know you've been to Chicago. I've seen episodes of different shows you've done here in Chicago.
I love Chicago. I literally yesterday, and again, not just saying it because, you know, speaking with you, we were talking about the summer. And I was, you know, because you do these food events, if, you know, in the food space, you know, there's food festivals and such to be had. And so we were talking about places where we had seen or attended or worked food festivals outside of our home. And somehow it turned to different cities that aren't necessarily thought of as summer cities that are great in the summer. And I just said, summertime Chicago is one of the best places on planet Earth. I don't, there's something about the vibe of that city in the summer, especially for me along the lake and the River North District. I don't know why those two places, River North and right all the, like the Gold Coast, I guess for obvious reasons, right?
But yeah.
You know, forget, like, you know, I could sit here and rhapsodize of the light reflecting off the bean. But, like, just walk. Like, I remember the beautiful days of, you know, go to the Art Institute and grab a coffee and sit outside and go for a walk and, you know, walk underneath the L and go by the lake. And I remember crossing, you know, one of the bridges going over into River North, and it's just a vibrant scene and great places to eat and drink and hear music, and the carriage rides are crossing over the bridges, and I don't know, there's just some, you know, the river, it's a very special vibe, you know. Kanye rhymes about summertime shy. I get it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the winter months are so annoying and brutal that you know, there's a vibe in the summertime because everybody's got a buzz about them, I think, just because we appreciate it while it's here. All right, so real quick, though,
yep,
food-wise, sure. Chicago. Can you throw a couple of names at me, maybe places we don't all go or that aren't tourist traps that you've been here and you're like, you know what, this is where you need to go in Chicago?
Absolutely. We actually filmed an episode of Man Finds Food, Secret Eats now, as I said it's called. We filmed the Secret Eats in Chicago. So hopefully you know, while they're airing the new episodes, they will show, I don't know, I can't, it's above my pay grade, they'll show it. So sure. The restaurants that we filmed at were a wonderful place called La Serena Clandestina,
okay,
which is not far from Aviary and Publican in the sort of meatpacking area.
Okay.
Great, and they have an off-menu dish called the Size Me Up, which is an amazing dish. There's an amazing, really amazing, to call it a gastropub would be doing it a disservice, but a really awesome bar with really awesome food called Scofflaw. And they have an off-menu sandwich called the Guapichosa. They only have 5 a day, and they're amazing. There is Fatso's or Phil's Last Stand in Ukrainian Village, the hot dog place. And even though it's a hot dog place, they have an off-menu shrimp po' boy sandwich, which is mental. And then the final one is a restaurant called A Tavola. And the gentleman there is said to be the gnocchi king of Chicago. And it's the off-menu, I think they call it the Italian meat and potatoes. And it's this gorgeous ribeye with gnocchi.
Now, Adam, I'm impressed. I know you knew you were doing an interview with a guy in Chicago, but I don't imagine you sat here and did research before. And do you have that type of memory for food? Because I know you didn't film that episode recently.
I'm a dork with it. It's so weird, but it makes me feel good to know that it was Bill Maher who said, now, is that a real fact or is that an anally derived statistic? Like, and Chicagoans, I'll tell you this, and I did a thing with Kenmore, the Kenmore Kitchens back in the day, best sandwich in Chicago, and Hannah's Bretzel won, but you had Murray's, and you had like all these amazing places, Lucky's, and all these amazing places had entered that, you know, you guys take your dog's drag through the garden real seriously. And for me, like, there are places that I don't miss. Sunda in River North, I think it's on Illinois.
Yeah.
Never miss it. And Stephanie Izard, a girl in the goat, is a genius. Rocket, big fan of Rocket. And, you know, and there's just every time I turn around, plus, Al's Italian Beef is like a national treasure, in my opinion. I had great Curtis Granderson's place. I had that awesome sandwich called the Four Courser. And the Maxwell Street Fair, my God, what good tacos.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in Chicago. We could do a whole separate hour on that, I'm
sure.
Hell
yes, sir.
The show is called Secret Eats. It's on the Travel Channel right now. Check it out at travelchannel.com. Check your local listings, as they say. Adam Richman, thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
Such a pleasure. Anytime.
All right, well, now that I'm hungry, Matt Bubala in for John Williams, 720 WGN. Hey, Lise, will you run outside right now and see if Dave Wansett will come say hi to us real quick? Go see if he will. He's walking by. You'll know him because he's very tall. Former Bears coach Dave Wansett just walking by. 312-981-7200. I think he's got a contract with another station and can't come on, but we're going to see if he'll come in and say hi just for a minute. Matt Bubala in for John Williams here on 720 WGN. We're here with you until 3 o'clock. Jared Payton comes in and does the show after this. Joining us in studio right now because he just happened to be walking down Michigan Avenue with one of his buddies, former Bears coach Dave Wansett. How are you, Coach?
I'm doing great. Oh, Jared's coming on. He's doing a full-time show or he's coming on as a guest?
No, I think Jared's on hosting at 3.
Oh, is he really? Yeah. How about that? That's great. Yeah, you know, I never met Jared. Obviously, I coach at the University of Miami, you know, followed his career and everything. I knew Walter when I was here at the Bears, played in a few, you know, charity golf tournaments, and he was always around at practice and games and stuff like that, but never met Jared.
Jared's an incredible guy. His sister Brittany, I mean, incredible kids that that Walter and his wife raised. They're definitely good people, that's for sure, as you would imagine.
Sure.
Coach, you are everywhere right now. It's so funny. You coach for the Bears. You coach at Pitt. You've been a coach forever, and now you are on everything. I hear you on the Score with Mullin Hanley. I hear you're on the Big Ten Network. You're doing Fox. You're doing everything now. Is it an incredible transformation to go from being the coach and having everything thrown at you forever when things are going wrong to now be the guy on the other side doing the analysis and talking about how things are going?
Well, you're being awful kind. Yeah, I went from an idiot being a coach to now I'm a genius. Now I got all the answers. You know, now I'm the analyst. I guess that's the term. But no, you know what? I'm fortunate to do this. I get my doing the radio shows and the TV shows during the week. I kind of get my football fixes, if you would, during the week. I'm, you know, whatever. And then when I fly to L.A. every weekend, and then I'm doing the NFL, their pregame show went to 2 hours now on Fox.
Okay.
You know, the one with Bradshaw and Jimmy and them. So I'm on the first hour, and I'm talking to NFL coaches during the week, and then with Fox, we're doing all the studio stuff for college football. So I'm talking to college coaches during the week, and then you know what? It's my Monday mornings are nice. Okay, I go get a coffee, and unless it's a close friend, you know, it's not laying there staring at the ceiling at 4 a.m. saying, "Why did we miss that field goal?"
Yeah, I'm sure there's that. But then, do you feel pressure? I mean, all you had to worry about at the time was the Bears or Pitt. Now you have to keep abreast of kind of everything going on. Is that tough to do? Or is it like, no, I love football, so I'll watch it all the time?
You know what? It's kind of been my life for 40 years straight. I coached 40 straight years in college and the NFL, pretty split up between the two. So it's I do my homework during the off season. You know, I mean, I just got back now. I was in L.A. at the Pac-12 meetings. I was in Dallas at the Big 12 meetings. The Big Ten had their meetings down here, here in Chicago. So I do enough of that stuff. Nothing that's overburdened, nothing that's stressful. But you do enough of that during the off season to kind of just make sure you're covering your bases and you're staying on top of anything new that's going on. And then when the season comes. You know, you pretty much let it roll. And like I say, anything I say is correct now. So it's easy.
Also the head coach of the Dolphins, of course. I didn't mention that. You're wearing a Buccaneers hat right now, though.
I am. You know what? My nephew is the head trainer of the Bucs.
Oh, excellent.
So, I'm supporting my...
Supporting the family.
Yeah, he was actually with the Bears for 14 years. Mm-hmm. And when Lovey got the job at the Bucs, you know, Lovey hired him down there, and he got a nice promotion out of the deal. And then he stayed on with the new coach, Dirk Cutter, who's now the new head coach of Tampa Bay. And I support the Bucs.
Good. Know. All right, so let's mention Lovey for a second, because he had all his time with the Bears, and then he went to the Bucs, and that was quick, and that's short, and that's how it can be. But now he's with the University of Illinois, and you've done both college and pro.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of transition is that between the pro ranks and the college ranks? How different is that for a head coach?
Well, it's the X and O's on the board, there's really no difference. The two biggest things that you have to deal with going from the NFL to the collegiate ranks, number one, the limited amount of time that you have with the players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden there's classes and there's study hall and, coach, we got to go take a test. And, you know, the things that come up with college life. I mean, you have to respect that. You have to, and it's NCAA rules, so you got to understand that. You know, probably the the second thing is, you know, in college football, any team, the lifeline of a good program is recruiting.
Yeah.
And the way they have it structured right now with the NCAA and collegiate recruiting, it's darn near 12 months a year. And that is a grind. Trust me. You're sitting there on a Friday afternoon. It's a gorgeous day. You're thinking you're going to sneak out. You're caught up and go play golf. And one of your assistants walks down the hall and says, "Hey, coach, Johnny so-and-so is just here. He was just at Notre Dame, you know, and now he wants to stop in on his way home. You know, are you available, you know, this afternoon to visit with his parents?" Well, this may be the only opportunity you get.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's what goes on. And that's the toughest part, and was for me anyway, is it just, hey, you know, if it was, you know, 3 or 4 months a year, fine, but it's really nonstop.
And you really have to, you know, have the personality for that recruiting. Is it? I mean, in the pros, these guys are signing contracts. They got a job to do. You're there to make sure they do that job. College, there's so much wooing. And how many, didn't I just read the other day, like 800 kids have transferred in the last year? Kids are transferring at huge rates.
Well, you know what's happened in college is now everybody wants to be the first-round draft pick, and everybody wants to go to the pros after 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be in the day, you'd go to college, you decide what you wanted to major in, and then if maybe in your junior year somebody told you, you know what, you might be good enough to play in the NFL, you said, "Oh, really?" Now it's completely opposite.
Yeah.
Now the kids go to college, and all they're thinking about is, "I'm going to be a first-round draft pick." That's what their parents are thinking. That's what their coaches, everybody's thinking that. And then, unfortunately, you know, there's very few players that fall into that category. What happens is now it's their junior year and it's reversed. And now they figure out they're not going to be going to the NFL for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And now they're behind in their schoolwork and it's a scramble. So I would say, to answer your question, why the transfers is because kids go somewhere, they expect to be the starter, they want to be the superstar, and they think the grass is always greener.
Yeah.
And more times than not, when that happens, they transfer somewhere else, and it's not, it doesn't work out. It's not any better.
And I imagine they're being told the grass is going to be greener. Not just they think it, but they're getting wooed a little bit. How much of that is going on where coaches are surreptitiously in some way getting word to those kids that, "Hey, I know you're caught up there, but boy, we'd have a place for you here."
Well, it's really not the head coaches, but the assistant coaches. What happens, you know, I mean, you start building a relationship with a kid in high school, maybe when he's in ninth grade. You're not specifically talking to him, but let's say you're recruiting a junior on that team, and he's a freshman or a sophomore. All of a sudden, you're at practice, and you're around this kid seeing you. You're saying hello. You know down the road he's going to be a player.
Yeah.
So now you have a relationship with him for 3 or 4 years, and they're the guys that are reaching out. It's really not the head coaches as much. And then they're firing coaches in college like they never have. You know, it used to be you'd minimum get 4 or 5 years. So now there's so much more turnover with coaches. So the coaches turn over, new guy comes in, he changes the offense, changes the defense. I was promised that I was going to be a drop-back passer. Now this new coach is a run-and-shoot guy.
Right.
You know, it's a quick pass game. So I'm leaving.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough. And, you know, I don't know how well you know Lovey. Of course, I just know him through the media and here. But he seems to me like the type of guy who might be able to thrive in that. Like, he always had the reputation players would run through a wall for him, right?
Right.
And maybe that's going to fit really well because it's a tough place to recruit in the middle of Illinois.
It is. It's a, you know, good academic school. I mean, they do have some – they've got a solid tradition. You know, I think that Lovey's hired to put together a good staff. You know, I know he's excited about it. I'll be interesting to see. And I haven't followed him as close on recruiting coming up as what I should to this point. But I'll get caught up on it. If he can get players win games.
Now that you've been on the other side, and you said that you were saying off the air, you've got a million different things you're doing, but it's 5 months of the year. You get to enjoy your life otherwise. You get to see the grandkids probably a lot. And it's better for your wife to get to see you a little more. And she might debate that or not.
Right.
But you also said that the drawback to coaching is kind of strong, and maybe there would be something that would draw you back. It surprises me because, like, Bill Cowher walked away from it. He's been an analyst forever and doesn't seem like he could get lured out. What is the allure of coming back to – because it's a grind. I mean, we watch Hard Knocks and things like that.
Yeah.
You see, you guys do nothing but football for so much of the year when you're a head coach.
It's probably a combination, really, of the competition and just being – you hate to say the togetherness with – with coaches and players. You know what I mean? That's kind of a neat thing. And but I get it, and I think that most coaches get it. I think if Bill was honest with himself, and I know I've talked to John Gruden enough, I'm good enough friends with him, talk to him. There's certain times of the year where we all kind of get the bug.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then there's times of the year where we're saying, you know what, boy, am I glad that I'm down
but
here.
But we hate when everybody's getting their heads chopped off on different teams.
And you know, in February when you're in a nice climate and the season's over and you're playing golf and they're banging their head recruiting or working on free agency. So it's there's times of the year, and that probably is just part of being a coach for 40 years.
40 years coaching. How much has it changed? I remember Tommy Waddle did a show here forever.
Right.
And I want to say Tommy played for you, right?
Yeah, he did. Tommy finished up his career for me. He was God. I mean, just when I had him, I would have loved to have him, obviously, 5 years earlier. When I had him, I think he was dealing with a bad knee. He was dealing with a bad back. He was... You know, and Tommy was the type that he wasn't the 4-3 receiver, you know, the total.
Tommy went in the middle and took a beating.
Tough guy.
And never dropped the ball.
Overachiever.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, know what to do, play every position. I mean, that's how he made a living. And so when his body kind of took a beating when I got him, I mean, he was – my first year, I remember that we were playing Detroit here. We were actually 7-5. Jim Harbaugh was our quarterback. And – we had Ryan Wetnight, who was a free agent at tight end. Bobby Christian from Northwestern here. He was a free agent. He was our running back. Terry Obie was a free agent receiver from Oregon. And then Tom Waddle was the only guy on the field from a skill position that had any experience. And I remember Jim coming off and he's screaming at me. I'm screaming at him. He said, no one knows what to do. I said, tell him what to do. These guys have all been here a month. I don't know what to tell you. Can't throw it to Waddle every time, you know.
Well, how much has it changed? Because I know Tommy would tell stories about, you know, you get hit, you get beat up, you're expected to get back out there. And we talk so much about the injuries now.
Oh, yeah. It was really pretty much, unless they carried you off the field or there was a bone, it was broken, you know, the obvious to everyone. You know, it was pretty much up to the player. And the trainer and the doctors would, how do you feel?
And then
the coach is standing there and the coach is turning saying, how do you feel? You know, and the players, I mean, they want to play. And like Tommy's saying, you know, more times than not when they weren't ready, they probably said, coach, I'm ready to go.
Let's get back out there. What's your prognosis for the Bears this year? Did not look good in that first preseason game. I know we can't judge a ton on that, but.
Yeah, I wouldn't put a lot on it. I like how they've drafted the 2 years. If Kevin White, the receiver from West Virginia, if he comes on and plays like I'm hoping he will, then I think they've had two really good drafts. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I like their people. I've known John Fox for 30 years. You know, he's really kind of stabilized the locker room. They got good coaches. I think they're going to be a little better. I truly do. But, you know, the problem that I think they're going to have is Detroit, I believe, is going to be a little better in the end. Green Bay is going to, if they stay healthy, is going to be better. And I know Minnesota is going to be better. So they could be a better football team, but because of the tough division they're in, I don't know how much it'll show up as far as wins and losses.
The great lightning rod, of course, is Jay Cutler. What's your take on Mr. Cutler?
Well, he's, you know, do what you did last year. You know, I don't know if it was how much Jay, how much the offensive coordinator how much John Fox, you know, who had the biggest influence on him, but whatever he did last year, that's the trick, you know, and run the ball well enough. There's very few of them that can carry the whole team on their shoulders. And I think Jay can make the throws. We all know that. He can make every throw that you need him to make. He just can't make him at 3rd and 10 and 3rd and 15.
Yeah.
So you got to do some things defensively, in my opinion, and running the ball to take a little pressure off him.
Coach Dave wants that. You'll find him on a TV channel or radio dial near you. Check your local listings. He's on just about all of them right now. Thanks so much for stopping in, Coach.
It was a pleasure. Good visit with you.
Matt Bubala on 720 WGN.
Bill, do your friends really like you?
Yeah, they love me.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I'm positive.
At 11:05, a new study finds only about half of your friendships are mutual. So maybe you like them, but do they like you?
I'm not ready to hear the answer to that.
Bill and Wendy middays, back Monday on 720 WGN. Till now, it seemed that the fancier the sofa,
the more uncomfortable the sofa.
Yeah, some of those classy couches could be used as torture devices.
But not anymore.
Introducing the Beckett sofa from Penny Mustard.
Just like a Beckett novel takes you to a far-off place.
Or Sam Beckett, quantum leaps into another era.
The Beckett sofa takes you to some kind of crazy alternate dimension where a sofa can be fancy and comfortable.
They said it couldn't be done.
But we did it.
American-made with solid hardwood frames.
High-density foam cushions.
Two rows of nail heads lining both the front and back for a unique look.
And a rare squared edge rolled arm.
How is that even possible?
The Beckett sofa allows you to enjoy the fanciest of styles without sacrificing comfort.
Is this the Twilight Zone?
Starting at $14.36 at Penny Mustard Furnishings.
Five locations throughout Chicagoland.
PennyMustard.com.
Better versions of what people want. Penny Mustard Furnishings.
Choose excitement. Choose action. Choose Hollywood casinos, and you've already won. Two Chicagoland locations with more of the games you want, more of the generous rewards you deserve, and celebrations that shine all night. That's the kind of star power that can take you places. Hollywood Casino Aurora and Joliet. There's no place like Hollywood. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, by the way, the 2:30 news, sponsored by Natron's Healthy Trinity. I don't remember mentioning that back then, at least. Maybe I did, but Natron's Healthy Trinity. Thank you again for the 2:30 news. Twin Garden Farms Mirai Sweet Corn is back. Yes, the wait is over. It's undeniably the best sweet corn out there. It's because of its extraordinary sweetness, flavor, texture, and tenderness. You've been hearing about it here for years. Once you take that first bite, you'll understand. So don't dilly-dally. Pick up your green mesh bag today before it's all gone. Go to Twin Garden Farms, a mile and a half west of Harvard on Route 173, or your local farmer's market. For market locations, go to twingardenfarms.com.
Never miss a story.
First, the big story, and Andre Darlis is here with it.
Repeating our top story.
That's your money on 720.
It is the big story for this hour.
Chicago's very own news team is on duty.
We'll have the latest news as it happens when news breaks.
Today on 720 WGN.
Let's face the facts, friends. We live in a world full of terrible smells like skunks, sports gear, baby diapers, cigarette smoke, and unshowered colleagues. Yuck. When the stink gets too strong, turn to the power of Freshwave natural odor-removing products. Freshwave doesn't use any toxic chemicals or phony fragrances. Inside, you'll find just plant extracts and water, naturally destroying bad smells instead of covering them up with a list of ingredients that includes lime, water. Freshwave is safe to use anytime, anywhere, on any odor imaginable. Freshwave got its start removing big industrial odors, wastewater treatment, and asphalt production. So imagine what Freshwave can do in your home. Ditch the chemical air fresheners that make you seriously ill and choose the natural odor-removing products from Freshwave. Odors go away. Happiness stays. Available at Ace Hardware, Bed Bath & Beyond, and Target. To find a location near you, visit FreshWaveWorks.com.
Join the Alzheimer's Association Greater Illinois Chapter Sunday, September 25th for their Walk to End Alzheimer's at Montrose on the Lakefront. Go to alz.org/walk for more information or to start a team today. The end of Alzheimer's starts with you.
Furniture shopping should be fun, but the fun disappears after traffic jams, crowded parking lots, pushy salespeople, and visiting several stores because of their limited selection. So leave the stoplights and stop-and-go traffic behind. Instead, enjoy a beautiful summer drive out I-80 and discover the selection of a dozen Chicagoland stores all in one place. That's Goods Furniture in Kewaunee. Imagine three city blocks of America's most wanted furniture names at Goods' everyday low price. Finding the perfect match for your style and budget doesn't get any easier. You'll be inspired by ideas at every turn, and the folks at Goods can guide you or let you explore on your own. Relax in the wine cellar restaurant, browse the clothing and gifts in the Market Square shops, even stay overnight at Goods Bed and Breakfast. Save your time, your energy, and your money. Head west on I-80 to Goods Furniture in Kewaunee. For details and to start browsing before you visit, check out goodsfurniture.com. Goods is open every day from 9 to 6. No hype, just honest-to-goodness value day in and day out. Kevin Powell and Mark Carmen. Where are you at, Carmen? You on that one?
I'm on this one.
You're on that
it's
one?
It's two. No, three.
Three lot.
Boom.
Remember we had Wani in studio?
Yeah. Why does the sports show get Wani in studio? Why does the general talk show guy get Wani in studio? Who's booking these shows?
Why can't the guy walk by 10 minutes later?
That would have worked out really well for you in your first hour, I'm guessing.
Well,
what a great guy.
I don't think we would have jumped on it the way you jumped on it, Matt Bubala. Congratulations.
Old producer. In
I was going to say that's your inner producer, right?
That's right. You remember that, Kev.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
By the way, congratulations on your afternoon sports gig. You enjoying that?
I'm having a blast. Yeah, love working with those guys.
What about you, Mr. Carm?
I'm an incredible talent.
That's true.
Thank you. No, I have my producer hat on, too. Buddy, I produced Cap for many a year and other shows.
Yeah, and you survived.
What would you have done if you saw Wani walking by while you were producing Cap's old show?
Would
Carm jumped out of his chair and ran outside a Tribune Tower and gotten Wani and brought him in?
I would have said Cap.
Would have made him go outside, and then Cap would have yelled at him if he didn't get it.
It probably would have gone something like, Cap, there's Dave Wanstead. And then he would point at him and say, my guy. And then that would be the end of it.
It's my guy, Dave Wanstead. Come on, Wani.
Guy.
It's my guy. So he's pretty pro Jay Cutler, it sounds like. I think he likes Cut.
I mean, I think you have to be at this point. It's the only guy on the team that's...
I think a lot of people still just would rather, let's just tank it all and start all over again, and let's not finish 7-9 or 8-8 and not get good draft picks.
Just look around the... No.